Louise McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. Take a proper break with a Cadbury Brunch bar.
But first, George Gibney was everywhere in the 1980s, the face behind the successes of many Irish swimmers, and he had the country's Olympic hopes on his shoulders. But he was also abusing many of the children he worked with. Mark Horgan, producer of the Second Captain's podcast, dedicated over 2 years of his life tracking and tracing George Gibney down, detailing all in his new podcast. He joins me now to discuss the journey. And Mark, I suppose I want to start with this. I asked my husband last night if he knew about George Gibney before the podcast, and he said no, because I was in America for 10 years, so I have some gaps in my knowledge, and I know a lot of people might be familiar with the accusations made against him, but there are many people who won't. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it depends on the age of the person in question as well.
Yeah.
And where they're from, obviously, because if you're outside of Ireland, you won't have heard of this guy. And if you're under a certain age in Ireland, you won't have heard of him.
Mm.
If you're certainly around in the late 80s, early 90s, and were of an age where you were, you know, watching TV and listening to radio and were interested in sport, then you couldn't help but encounter him in some way.
Mm.
And there was, at that stage in Ireland, quite unusually, Gary O'Toole was a huge swimmer and a huge sports person. So he was this individual who had a position in society that you kind of couldn't countenance it now. You know, Gary O'Toole as a swimmer was one of the biggest sports people in the country and was absolutely loved. But the man that was everywhere with him and was seen as the person that brought him forward and was with him every step of the way was George Gibney. And so he kind of built up this big persona on the back of Gary. But on top of that, when there was any opportunity available for him to kind of publicize himself individually and for him to get, get credit for Gary's achievements, he'd take it.
Right.
And so he was on TV chat shows and he was on, you know, he would get huge amounts of column inches and headlines and
so he was kind of a celeb.
He absolutely was.
Yeah.
And it transcended sport at times.
Mm.
So he was somebody that certainly if you were of a certain age, you would have been aware of him. And then, of course, when the reality and the truth about him and his story came out in the early 90s, then he became infamous.
So you mentioned Gary O'Toole there, and Gary O'Toole is kind of the gateway to all of the revelations about George Gibney, wasn't he?
Mm, yeah.
I want to ask you about how you came to the podcast before we delve any deeper into the story itself. So you obviously are a sports journalist. You've been working in sports journalism for many years. But what made you decide to focus on this in such an intense way? Because it's a very thorough podcast. So you really must have dedicated an awful lot of time and thought to this.
Yeah, it was kind of a few things, really. It was the podcast that I work on, the Second Captain's podcast, before we started doing stuff by ourselves. We were working with News Talk and working for the Off the Ball show on News Talk. So we've been kind of doing sports stories since like 2004 now, you know, so it's a long time. But we've often done stories of abuse in sport and we've kind of touched on them and really just, you know, reported on the stories as they were happening a lot of the time. So, for example, the Larry Nassar case in gymnastics at the start of 2018, kind of end of 2017, we were reporting on that. And there just seemed to be this kind of group of similar type of cases. Well, just abuse in sport, really. But it was the Barry Bunnell cases in English football came forward, Larry Nassar. And then there was also Bill Keneally in Waterford. There was just cases and stories that had similarities in that they were abuse of people, abuse of up and coming sports people by individuals in positions of power and then manipulating those people. When we were doing those types of stories around that time, I remember thinking, there's of the scandals in Irish swimming and of George Gibney, but I completely misremembered the story itself because I thought that he'd been convicted. I thought that there was this raft, as people would have heard in the podcast on Thursday, there's this raft of abusers in Irish swimming at the one time. And it was an incredible scandal. But in my mind, I thought, okay, all these people have been convicted. And we'd even done a story on George Gibney back in the mid-2000s.
Mm.
And so when I started looking into it and understanding kind of the depths of it, how it was a cross-continental story that actually these people that he was abusing back in the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, the traits and the parallels were there with those cases that were coming out in the courts today around the world.
Mm.
And that the voices of those people who were being heard now, you know, and helped by the Me Too movement and all that at that time, those individuals and those people that were abused by George Gibney, their voices weren't heard and they weren't believed. And also, you know, people forget. I'd forgotten about it. So there was so much depth to it that I kind of felt that it was deserving of something that was on a much bigger scale than just a single podcast. And also was kind of influenced by other podcasts that I'd seen that had developed stories like this. And I thought that this actually had a lot of elements that were very current, but also had this vast archive of sounds and of his voice that we could use.
Yeah, I have found it absolutely engrossing. Every episode, I'm furious that I have to wait every week for a new one, because as a story and the way that you're telling it, it is absolutely enthralling. But while I was trying to tweet about it recently, and I was saying it's what a story. But even saying a story seems completely wrong, because you're talking about people whose lives were, you know, ruined or definitely negatively impacted, and you know, people who are alive today around us in Ireland. And I think that's, for me, been the most striking thing about listening to it, is that the victims of George Gibney seemed so strong. That sounds trite, but seemed so strong, and also so willing to talk to you when they had already been through a court case which was thrown out, and they'd already had to tell their stories. And now, you know, years later, you come along and you say, hey, will you talk about it again, and will you talk about it publicly? And yet it seems like they were also willing to do that.
Yeah, I think they were, with certain conditions as well, in that it wasn't just a case of getting in contact and saying this is what I want to do.
You know,
it was, they were willing, but it was, you know, you would have heard Trish and Burr and Chalky in the opening two episodes. Mm-hmm. And these are people that have thought about this case more than anybody else. You know, they're very smart. They're very strong. They're very aware of all the elements of it. So really, it is a case of trying to outline to them that this isn't something that's just going to be touched on, that this is going to be something that is going to delve a lot deeper into the subject matter, and that it's going to be also kind of done on their terms. You know, what I kind of have loved about the last few weeks is a sense that, you know, when I see Cass, who's the producer of the podcast, with me, and Cass identified this, when you see on Twitter now, it's Burr and Trish tweeting directly and tweeting about the podcast and, you know, owning it.
Yeah.
And I think that was really important for me, and really important for them, that their stories were properly told, that they had ownership over those stories.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in my voice, it was in their voice.
So
once it got going and once they agreed to do it, they were incredibly supportive. And that point that you make is really true. It's when I approached them first of all, and after we spoke, I was also thought so much about that this actually might be the right thing for them, you know, and that I mightn't do this justice and mightn't do their story justice. But yet I've asked them to talk about the most difficult things that have ever happened in their lives at great depth, and there mightn't be any payback for it, you know, if that's the right word.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the point where we were happy with what we had put together, and we realized, okay, no, actually, I think this does represent the people, the survivors, well, then it felt like such a positive thing to do. And I don't know if you noticed, but Trish tweeted during the week, she wrote a post. Trish is really a talented writer, but the basic premise of it was that it's never too late to be heard. And I think that's so powerful and so important. Like these crimes happened, you know, decades ago, but it's never too late to be heard. It's never too late for these stories to be told.
Yeah.
And it's also another line that happened in the podcast last week was that by Jennifer Garcia, a survivor of separate abuse, was that just because it happened years ago doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And for me, a key thing along with all that was what George Gibney wants to happen here is for his name to be forgotten about and never talked about. Whereas through the survivors' voices, that isn't happening now.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. And that concept, or that statement from Trish, is even more important when you consider the fact that the reason that the cases were originally thrown out was because of the time that had gone by. That was how they got away with it. That too much time had gone by. Nobody could possibly provide a credible alibi. And so therefore the case was thrown out, even though that same defence was tried. They tried to use it for another abusive swimming coach later on, and it was rejected. But I thought it was really incredible when you mentioned that one of the people who you met, her husband answered the door and said, oh, we've been waiting for you. So obviously the appetite to tell the story and to have their voices heard was absolutely there.
Yeah. So that was Burr, Carly's husband. But that was originally with Gary.
Right.
So when Gary,
it was Gary, sorry.
So yeah. We follow Gary's path in episode two, where Gary O'Toole, who we mentioned earlier on, he as a 24-year-old took it upon himself when he got told by a fellow swimmer and coach, Chalky White. I know these are a lot of names to throw at people, but when he was told by Chalky that George Gibney had abused him, that was the first time Gary had heard from anybody that George Gibney had actually been sexually abusing his young swimmers.
Yeah.
And then Gary at that point, as a really famous sports person in Ireland, just 24, still a student, took it upon himself to say, okay, I believe you. And that was in 1991. Mm. I believe you, but also I'm going to try and find other swimmers because I think there's other people out there. So
I hadn't taken that in, that he was only 24. That is incredible, because he really pursued it, and he obviously made people feel safe in talking to him. Now, I presume having a profile like that would make, you know, it a little bit easier than if you're a total stranger turning up at someone's door, you know, if they knew who he was and they knew what he was about generally. But yeah, wow, that's really incredible. 24.
Yeah, it seems that they, you know, they did really trust him. But even I think sometimes even somebody who might have that sort of profile or might be well known, it can even add a layer of difficulty. I think it's just he was so sensitive. They trusted him. And he's such an honest man, a trustworthy person. So I think, when he did go to Burr Carley's house and when her husband answered the door, when he saw Gary, it was like they immediately knew. They'd started talking about it again and kind of trying to, you know, figure out what they were going to do. But yeah, he said, I've been expecting you for years. So they were almost waiting for that moment. They were waiting just to be guided a little bit. And that's what they did.
The thing about this, I suppose, is that this isn't just about the, you know, there are the stories and you're telling the story of what happened, but you are also looking for George Gibney. Now, we only have so many episodes out, so obviously I'm not expecting you to tell me, you know, what's happened, but we hear in the first episode that you do find him. Mm-hmm. What were you hoping to achieve from this?
Yeah, we find him in the very first scene in the first episode.
Mm.
And I think kind of part of the reason why we did that then was the series isn't about finding somebody, putting a mic in front of them and, you know, just hunting a person down. The whole point of the series is to try and understand his life now in a lot more depth than that. So there's a whole lot of issues around doing that in the United States anyway. You can't just doorstep somebody and put a mic in front of them. But even if you could, that was never what our intention was going to be. So we need to find out information like, you know, how does he live his life today? Does he work? Does he have access to children? Is he still coaching? All those types of, how is he perceived in the community? All those really crucial bits of information that to find them out and to gather, you have to step back. So basically meeting Gibney in episode one, or identifying Gibney in episode one, meant that the listeners are kind of coming on a journey with us, an actual journey a lot of the time, where they know that we're trying to identify information on George Gibney and George Gibney doesn't know that we're there, but the listeners are with us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's basically what we wanted to find out was all those elements that I talked about, Louise, as much information as we possibly could to ensure that nobody else is being put in danger, and to understand how he's putting himself out there today in the United States.
And of course, the podcast isn't finished.
No, it's a long way from finished.
I have 75,000 questions for you, mostly mechanics about podcasts and that kind of stuff, which I don't think everybody wants to listen to. But one thing I have to ask you before I let you go is Aaron Dessner of The National did the music. How did that happen?
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
When I heard it, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's basically through Lisa Hannigan, who is a friend of our executive producer, Dylan Haskins, and is also, I know Lisa as well. That sounds like an awful name. I know Lisa as well, by the way. I do know.
It's not just Dylan.
No. So basically, we got in touch with Lisa about potentially working on a composition and working on the Sig tune. And she had been doing some work and had been in contact with Aaron Dessner, and had kind of, when she heard the subject matter and she heard the sounds of the types of the podcast that we wanted to do, and the time that we were putting into it and all those sorts of elements, that she had heard a piece of music that she thought would be perfect for it. And so we got in contact with the man himself and were able to make it happen. So it's a beautiful original piece of music just for the podcast.
It really is. Before I knew it was him, I admired it. Like, I felt like it was a really good fit. So that's fantastic. Well, I love to hear all those little background bits. If you haven't listened to the podcast, I'm sure you're dying to listen to it now. There's so much in it. It is really just brilliantly put together. And I think it's incredible to hear an Irish story, for want of a better word, told at this level. It's really super work. So congratulations, Mark Horgan. It's the podcast is Where is George Gibney. You can get it on all the usual podcast platforms, and it's a BBC Sounds podcast. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks, Louise.
Louise McSharry on 2FM
with Cadbury Brunch. Take a proper break with a Cadbury Brunch Bar.